Welcome to the Produce Industry Podcast, your weekly download on current events, trends, market reports, and community discussions. Join us each week from Tampa, Florida, as we cover all aspects of the produce supply chain industry. Ladies and gentlemen, here's your host, Patrick Kelly.
Hey, produce people, welcome back to the Produce Industry Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Kelly, along with my co-host for the series, John Papp of Jack Vandenberg, Inc. Today is June 5th, 2023, and we are in episode 5 of our new series all about the global history of produce, including fun facts and stories, when it all started, how it became commercialized, and how and when and why we do it. The origins of some food extend to the earliest human civilizations. Through the centuries, many of these foods shaped or altered the course of history. In the process, some of them took on a life of their own in religion, literature, the arts, and pop culture. This is the history of potatoes. Hey, John.
Hey, Patrick. Hello, everybody. So we have another great one for you today. Then again, when don't we have a great one, right?
Right. We said that on the phone today when we were talking, but I've got the real question. And this is the million-dollar question. Is it potato or potato, John? I mean, that's the question.
It's always the question with potatoes or potatoes. But you know what? With everyone today in the world wanting to know where their food comes from, we figured we'd take the time to really tell you. So think about when you walk to the grocery store's produce department, you see that wall of potatoes or the rack of bananas. You're walking into a time capsule of fruits and veggies that were developed some over 7 million years ago. So let's get this episode started by letting the people know how it begun. And as usual, if you're interested in any of our references, please see the episode description for more details. So today is potatoes and
potato.
But let me ask you a question, Patrick. You have a potato today?
Have I had a potato today?
Yeah.
I'm going to be real with you. I do not eat a lot of potatoes. I don't. I really don't. I eat mini potatoes. I just think they have a lot of starch in them. Like when you think of like potatoes, it's like the old meat and potato guys, right? So potatoes, I do. Now, I will tell you, you know, the little nibbles, right? Who's got those? That is, Tasteful Selections has those.
I love those.
And the nibbles, man, oh my God, I love them. But when you think of like a twice-baked potato, I don't think I've eaten a big potato. Like, that's what I think about when you're asking that question. I have not eaten a big potato like that. Oh God, some people might kill me out here. It's probably been a few years. But those nibbles? Oh, bro, in the air fryer almost once a week right there. So
a little crunch on the skin. Mm.
Think about it. Listen, oh, now just gave me an idea. We got to do Brussels sprouts because I thought about Brussels sprouts and potatoes in the air fryer just now. So no, I haven't had my...
Got to focus, though. We got to focus.
I haven't had my dose of potatoes, John.
Well, amazingly, well, or maybe not so amazingly, the average American eats actually 120 pounds of potatoes a year. Now, there's a caveat, only 29 pounds of that 120 are fresh potatoes. You know, the rest are processed potatoes, so chips. And actually, I had a potato today in the format of chips actually right before this recording. So I'm in that statistic. But
so potato chips count.
Potato chips count.
I had some chips yesterday. Does that count?
See, there you go. You've had potatoes. So potatoes is actually the fourth most cultivated staple food crop after wheat, corn, and rice, and is grown in virtually every country. Now, what is the potato exactly? So that potato is actually the root of the plant Solanum tuberosum. It's a tuber. And what is a tuber? So a tuber is a type of enlarged structure that is used to store the organs and nutrients in some plants, and they're used for the plant's perenneration to provide energy and nutrients. So that's basically what you're eating when you're having a potato. And they're part of a group that includes the tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, but not the sweet potato. Sweet potato is a totally different family and actually probably another episode we can do on. But potatoes are pretty unique because they use a lot less water than other crops. They grow in a crazy amount of variety of climatic conditions, including poor soil. And actually back in 2008, UN named it the International Year of the Potato. So potatoes are actually a pretty amazing piece of vegetable. But let's dive into the origins here. So the potato is believed to have developed or been domesticated, rather, in the Andes Mountains about 7,000 to 10,000 years ago in the Lake Titicaca region, which is between Bolivia and Peru. There are about 150 species of wild relatives, and today there are over 5,000 varieties of potatoes, which kind of is mind-boggling when I started thinking about it. Now, geographically, the Andes are pretty an unlikely birthplace for a major staple crop, if you think about it. You know, it's a long mountain range, one of the longest ranges on the planet. It's about 5,500 miles long, and in many places, more than 22,000 feet high. So you have temperatures in the highlands that can fluctuate from 75 degrees Fahrenheit to below freezing in just a few hours. And the reason for that is, again, the height, the air is too thin to hold the heat. So the potato's resilience to very harsh conditions makes it very easy crop for breeding. And actually, even Darwin noticed this when he made his trip to Patagonia in the 1800s and actually wrote this. He wrote, "It is remarkable that the same plant should be found on the sterile mountains of central Chile, where a drop of rain does not fall for more than 6 months and within the damp forests of the southern islands." So you can just, again, see that picture he's painted of the vast difference in climates that this crop is growing in. And for millennia, peoples jostled for power in this area of the Andes Mountains from Ecuador to northern Chile. And the mountain cultures differed pretty strikingly from one another. But we're nourished by this tuber and root crop, and the potato was the most important. Now, wild potatoes, which is a nightshade, are actually highly toxic. They're laced with selenine and tomatidine, toxic compounds believed to defend the plant against attacks from dangerous organisms, bacteria, and us human beings. So what would happen is, or what's theorized, is that the peoples in the Andes would observe animals, specifically the llamas, a type of wild relative of the llama, licking clay before eating these plants. And what that would do is the toxins would actually stick to the clay, and then they would, so when they were eating these potatoes, the toxins were absorbed by the clay and they were able to eat it without being harmed. So basically humans started mimicking this process in that region, dunking wild potatoes in gravy made of clay and water. And they eventually started breeding less toxic potatoes and evolving those potatoes into potatoes that didn't have to be dunked in clay, even though that practice is actually still done today. You can actually find clay dust sold in Peruvian and Bolivian markets to accompany certain potatoes.
You know, my question is, John, is, you know, one, when you think of like nightshade, that kind of, it's funny because it brought me back to like old movies, right? Where when things would happen or someone got poisoned, you would hear that word nightshade, right? Mm-hmm. You would. It almost brought me back to like, it's like a Mortal Kombat finishing move or something, right? Like pull nightshade on him, right? And that's crazy. And that's funny is, let's think of like Lake Titicaca. We all learned about that in school. Think about it. Do you remember being in middle school and going through world history? Right?
Oh, yeah. If you look at the whole thing.
Lake Titicaca, I mean, like I said, between Peru, Bolivia, and Chile. And it's kind of interesting because even it's pretty close to Machu Picchu. You know, it's only 400 or so kilometers away. And, you know, when I think of, it's funny because, you know, with your family coming from Europe, I always think about that, right? Like, potatoes was like a main, like it was like a main vegetable in the early, you know, I would say early days of our heritage, right? I mean, potatoes was like one of the main vegetables. I mean, people weren't cooking Brussels sprouts and artichokes and all that stuff in those days. So it is, it's really interesting to me to start hearing the early history of potatoes and seeing, you know, where it comes to now. And when you look at that, I mean, we're going to 500 to 1400 AD as we start to look at it. And this is the emergence of two reliable stable crops, right? So in the potatoes and maize would allow for the Andean region to support large populations across its valleys and mountain ranges, laying the groundwork for the emergence of the Incan civilization. Now, John, during the period, the Incas were on the fastest growing populations in Americas. And this was linked to the improvements of ag production, right, John? So that's what's so cool about it. So treating this storing of the foodstuffs, potato production had been boosted through improving farming techniques, right? Selective breeding, crop rotations, and this vital food was firmly embedded into the Andean culture. And I think that's what's kind of cool about it, is that as we start to look at this, you know, for the Incas, potatoes were so important that they were also used as medicine, right? There's that nightshade again, right? Because I know that people are able to use things out of it. So what did they get from fermented potatoes, John? Do you know the answer?
I don't.
Okay. Penicillin-like properties. How crazy is that? So there's even some evidence that they served as a timekeeping unit. How long it took the potatoes to be cooked represented the unit of time. So the Andean Indians ate potatoes boiled, baked, and mashed, as Europeans do now, right? But potatoes were also boiled, peeled, chopped, and dried to make papas secas, fermented in stagnant water to create sticky, odorous togash, and ground to pulp, soaked in a jug and filtered to produce alimadan de papa, which is also now just called potato starch, everyone. So most of the unbiguous was chuno, which is made by spreading potatoes outside to freeze on cold nights, then thawing them in the morning sun. Repeated freeze-thaw cycles transformed the spuds into soft, juicy blobs. Farmers would squeeze out the water to produce the chuno, stiff, right, styrofoam-like nodules, much smaller and lighter than the original tubers that John just talked about, right? The technique also neutralized the poisonous glycocalyloids that were present in some of the bitter varieties, allowing these to be eaten safely, everyone. That's the main thing. Commercializing this product to actually be safe to eat. So the potato Andeans, right? The Andeans and the potatoes, right? Those two roasted before contact with Europeans. It was not much more than the modern spud. They cultivated different varieties at different altitudes. Most people in a village planted a few basic types, but most everyone also planted others to have a variety of tastes, right? And if you think about that today, everyone, we have fingerling potatoes. We've got miniature potatoes. We've got the big potatoes. And John, I could actually ask you the question. Do they all taste different?
That's a great question, actually. I don't know if I've ever really paid attention. Then again, I don't honestly know how many varieties of potatoes I've actually had. So I don't know. I could be eating the same one or two potatoes all my life. I couldn't answer.
Well, that's the funny thing. A lot of times with potatoes, we're putting things on it, everyone, right? A twice-baked potato has cheese and bacon and chives, right? Sour cream. Our other, you know, the Nibbles potatoes that we talked about from Tasteful Selections, we put probably some, you know, some garlic on it, maybe some pork rub. We throw those in the air fryer with a little bit of olive oil. Every piece of it has some type of other product on it, just like chicken. If you were to eat chicken plain, it doesn't taste very good. Like the other complements of produce, like onions, make it taste good, right? So we kind of do that. So I think that's an option that we need to really figure out what they taste like. So the range of potatoes, though, in a single Andean field exceeds the diversity of 9/10 of the potato crop of the entire United States, though, John. So that's what was even more interesting, is that this village took it to the next level, right? This culture, the demographics of the Andeans, they took it to the next level. Compared with grains, tubers were inherently more productive. If the head of the wheat or rice plant grows too big, the plant will fall over, right? Fatal results. Boom. Done crop. Growing underground, tubers are not limited by the rest of the plant. So in 2008, a Lebanese farmer dug up a potato that weighed nearly 25 pounds, and it was bigger than his head. So, I mean, John, I mean, as we move through the years, I mean, obviously, it changes more and more.
Yeah, I mean, finally, as always, as we've seen in our prior episodes, the Europeans eventually enter the scene here, and as we all know from our general history lessons, it was the Spanish that came into this region around 1530 through the crew of Francisco Pizarro, who started noticing the locals eating these potatoes. And it was a plant that was very different from what they were used to seeing. You know, they were used to seeing root trees or grains that involved seeds. And so they had a really difficult time comprehending this plant. You know, potatoes were not grown from seed, but from little chunks of tuber. So they were a little confused. And they, in addition, they also misused the Indian word patata, which was assigned to sweet potato, as the name for potato noted the importance of the tuber to the Incan Empire. It was believed that the Spanish sailors brought this potato back to them, back with them across the Atlantic around 1570. And they introduced it in the ship stores as a hearty foodstuff that could easily survive long journeys, and as a source of food, obviously, for the sailors. And during that time, they actually noticed that the sailors who started eating this potatoes did not suffer from scurvy. So you can actually remember when we were talking about citrus and lemons in particular, there was that observation. But this is about two or three centuries before that, they started noticing that potatoes was helping solve scurvy. And the reason for that is potatoes actually contain a higher vitamin C than even oranges, and more potassium than bananas, and more fiber than an apple. So again, potatoes, very, very nutrient rich. By the 1600s, so about three decades after the Spanish brought the potato over to Europe, it spread throughout all of Europe. And it wasn't being spread for its consumption purposes, but mainly for its flowers. And I don't know if, Patrick, have you ever seen a potato flower? I know I hadn't. I had to kind of Google that one. And they're actually pretty nice-looking flowers. So they were used as ornamental plants. And when Europe started playing around with the ideas as a food source, it didn't really go so smoothly. It was treated with suspicion, distaste, and fear. It was generally considered to be unfit for human consumption. And they ended up only being used as animal fodder and sustenance for the starving. So basically a very, very, very last resort piece of food. And the reason for that is that some people felt that the potatoes plant's resemblance to plants in the nightshade family, which it was, hinted that it was the creation of witches or devils. The Russian Orthodox Church actually thought the potato suspect because it was not mentioned in the Bible. And the commoners actually referred to it as the devil's apple. So that was the nickname, the moniker that they gave to the potato.
The devil's apple.
That's right.
The devil's, listen, I mean, let's be real here. They got the devil's apple, the devil's lettuce. I mean, they got a lot of stuff going on.
Hey, religion was a big part of your life. You lived and died by the grace of God or the disease of the devil.
True that, my friend. Amen.
So you actually even have a philosopher critic, a Denis Diderot from France, that took a middle stance on this potato in his encyclopedia in the 1750s. And he wrote this. He wrote, quote, "No matter how you prepare it, the root is tasteless and starchy. It cannot be regarded as an enjoyable food, but it provides abundant, reasonably healthy food for men who want nothing but sustenance." And in addition to that, he also viewed the potato as windy. In other words, causing gas. But he still gave it a thumbs up. He goes, "What is windiness to the strong bodies of peasants and laborers?"
Very true. I mean, very, very true. My thing is, you know, when you look at potatoes, is, like I said, the meat and potatoes type guys. I've got guys, and I might get killed for this, but like, I got some friends that are like Midwest guys, you know, South guys, and they're like, "I don't eat greens." I'm like, "What do you mean you don't eat greens?" He's like, "Ew, asparagus, get away from me. Broccoli, get away from me." He's like, "I have my steak and I have potatoes 2 to 3 nights a week." I'm like, "All you eat is potatoes?" I'm like, and he's like, "That's it, man." He's like, that's my go-to vegetable, man. And I'm like, okay, right? You know me. I'm like, "Oh, okay, I get it." I'm like, "Can we get some greens in there?" He's like, "Ew." He's like, "No." He's like, "Green beans don't go well with steak." And I'm like, I'm so confused at this point.
Well, it's actually funny. You know what? Your friends there might actually have some points there, because the potato actually does have a ton of nutrients. The problem is, when we cook it the way we do in modern society, exactly, with oils and fats, we kind of destroy the benefits of it. But we won't go down that road just yet. Let's keep moving forward here. So basically, it's in Europe. People are not so thrilled about it. But then something called the Little Ice Age hits, and this kind of sets up the potato for success. So for those who don't know, the Little Ice Age was for a period around 300 to 400 years, where basically Europe was colder than normal. The continent was struggling to sustain itself because there wasn't enough food for everyone, as the climate change was affecting the production of traditional crops. You had cattle dying because of the extreme cold. And so famine and hunger was very, very prevalent, specifically in the 17th and 18th century Europe. Cities were provisioned pretty well in most years, but the country people basically teetered on the precipice, basically the peasants and laborers. And you even have a historian that once calculated that in France, there had been about 40 nationwide famines between 1500 and 1800. That's more than one per decade, which is incredible. Incredible. And this was actually an underestimate, he said, because it only amid the hundreds and hundreds of local famines. And France was not an exception. You know, England had 17 national and big regional famines between 1523 and 1623. So clearly the continents just simply could not reliably feed itself. But again, the potato was around. And what was amazing about the potatoes, to plant the potato, all you need is your hands. You don't need special tools or equipment to plant. After harvest, all you had to do was boil it in water. You know, there was no threshing, milling, or baking into bread like you have to do with grains. Potatoes grew underground, so it was protected from animals and soldiers that would plunder during the war. And it was more nutritionally balanced food. So it was really a saving grace, this piece of vegetable. And by the 17th century, scholars came around and understood the potato was safe to eat. And in the same area, they figured that potatoes were grown could provide 10 times more yield than wheat. So look at a hectare of land with wheat. Might be able to have enough yields of protein to feed about 7 people over the course of a year, whereas a hectare of potatoes will nourish 17 people. So pretty amazing power. And so the first, during this period, you start now having leaders of the various factions in Europe start to recognize the benefits of this. And they saw this as a big tool, because if you can feed your people, that gives you an upper hand in the economy, in wars, in all facets of your state. So King Frederick the Great of Prussia was one of those that saw the great potential of the potato. So in 1756, on the onset of the Seven Years' War, this king issued the potato edict. It is a tough one. And it was the first of 15 decrees regarding potatoes in his lifetime. I'm not going to go all through 15, but this was the important one. And this one basically demanded that farmers plant potatoes, whether they like it or not. And so huge was the prejudice against the potatoes that actually many farmers refused, even despite threats to cut their noses and ears if they refused. So there's actually even a statement that the people of a town called Kohlberg, for instance, replied to the king's order to grow potatoes by saying, "The things have neither smell nor taste, not even the dogs will eat them. So what use are they to us?" Now, the king, as legend says, decided to use reverse psychology and actually planted large plots of land with potatoes in royal fields and set up pretty serious guards around them. And his goal was to make these villagers in the surrounding areas think that this was something precious. You know, obviously if it's being protected, the villagers can be like, all right, what's being grown there? Obviously, whatever it is, I want it because they're guarding it. And this worked. Apparently what happened is the king told the guards to leave at night and the villagers would start stealing the potatoes and planting them for themselves. Now, this is how he became known as the Potato King. And actually you can go to his grave today and still find people placing potatoes on his grave. But stories like this are usually not, you know, they're too good to sound true. And there's no real documentation of this. And actually, if you go and look at other countries during the same period, every country had a person that fit the role of that king with this story. So if you go to France, there's a similar story in Sweden. So it's a nice story. To what degree it's true, we don't really know.
We don't really know, right? But I'll tell you what, John, this is a perfect time. We're going to take a quick break. And listen, everybody, when you get back, we're going to talk about France, the 1800s, the 1900s, and then moving into today's crop. So we'll be right back.
Discover orchard freshness on Amazon Fresh with Arctic Apple Slices. Arctic Apple stays orchard fresh longer than other pre-packaged, pre-sliced apples. This means less waste and no more half-eaten apples. Plus, you'll love the undeniable freshly picked flavor. Arctic apple slices are available in convenient grab-and-go bags in both Arctic Golden or Arctic Granny varieties in select markets on Amazon Fresh. Packable, snackable, 100% irresistible. JGLC, the place to be, a third-generation, family-owned and operated asset-based company. Throughout their 60 years in business, integrity, reliability, and loyalty to their customers has remained their top priority. JGLC guarantees 24/7 communication with your personal logistics coordinator. They offer competitive pricing without sacrificing services. They operate throughout the United States and Canada. JGLC's customers count on them for dependability and dedication carried out on every order, every time. 60 years of service for all your trucking needs. Visit them at jglc.com for your custom quote.
Are you ready to enhance your skills? Every day we are tasked to make fast, effective decisions to keep up with the fast-paced produce industry. At Ag Tools, we take the pressure off of gathering data to help make your day easier and more enjoyable. Connecting the supply chain with Ag Tools is unique, practical, and easy. Ag Tools can be used from multiple angles of the produce industry, from farmers all the way to logistics companies. We call that 360-degree decision-making day after day. Visit us at www.agtechtools.com to gain more reliable and relevant data to see more, achieve more. And now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Produce Industry Podcast, everyone. Our series on the history of fresh produce got my man in the studio, John Papp from Jack Vandenberg, Inc. And everybody, I'm telling you, these history series get me thinking more and more, John. I mean, you told me this on the phone earlier. I said, is it a good one today? And you said, aren't they all, right? I mean, we're learning more about fresh produce. We're learning about where our food comes from. And we're learning about different items that we never would have thought went through all these trials and tribulations just trying to get commercialized, right? I mean, during the break, I went ahead and looked up the potato flower, a purplish white flower. It is very pretty. I love it. I mean, that's one of the things I never knew potatoes had flowers. I always thought they would grow like the spud. You know what I mean? When you keep a you got another like spud coming out of it. So, well, let's get back into this. So if we look, France was especially slow to adopt. Okay. That's one thing we can touch on right now. In fact, potato was banned in France in 1748 as it was suspected to cause disease such as leprosy, syphilis, early death, sterility, rampant sexuality. Oh my gosh. I mean, there is
so sterile and rampant sex at the same time.
Yeah. So it made you, so you couldn't have kids, but your sex drive was
through the roof.
Someone grab me a potato. No, as I'm 40 years old, potatoes are sounding pretty darn good to me right now, bro. But, destroying the soil where it grew. So a lot of it, was banned, right? So into the fray stepped Antoine Augustin Parmentier.
Parmentier.
Thank you. Appreciate Parmentier. It, the potatoes, Johnny Appleseed. That's funny. So trained as, so listen, this guy, so Parmentier, how do you say it?
Parmentier. I'm going to give you a French lesson.
Served in the army during the Seven-Year War. And that was 1756 to 1763 and was captured by the Prussians five times. So during his multiple prison stints, he ate little but potatoes, a diet that kept him in good health. His surprise at the outcome led Parmentier. Dang, I said it wrong again. Parmentier to become a pioneering. Nutritional chemist after the war ended in 1763. So he devoted the rest of his life to the potato. Let's be real. So by 1772, his mission was to prove the French that potatoes were delicious and good for you. And in the same year, the French government repealed the potato ban because of Parmentier's pioneering work. In 1773, he even won an award from the Academy
of Besan Khan for research that proved potatoes were a great source of nutrition for people suffering, you know, from dysentery. Didn't know. I don't think anybody died from high sex drive, John. I don't think anybody was dying from that.
I don't think so.
We definitely, though, I mean, there was probably some less children back then, right? And you were eating a lot of potatoes, okay? But again, Parmentier timing was good. After Louis, what is that? Jeez.
Louis the 16th.
The 16th was crowned in 1775. He lifted price controls on grain. Bread prices shot up, sparking what became known as the Flour War. More than 300 civil disturbances in 82 towns. Wow. So he then tirelessly proclaimed that France would stop fighting over bread if only citizens would eat potatoes. Meanwhile, he set up one of the publicly stunt after another, presenting an all-potato dinner to high society guests, supposedly persuading the king and queen to wear potato blossoms and planting 40 acres of potatoes at the edge of Paris. It's kind of like nowadays when we do these promotions in the stores, it's like the Citralicious program, right? They make it to where when you walk in some of these retailers, it has everything to do with citrus. And then what do? You walk out with citrus, right? That was his goal. So Maria Antoinette liked the blossoms so much that she put them in her hair. Her husband, Louis the 16th, put one in his buttonhole, inspiring a brief vogue in which the French aristocracy swanned around the potato plants on their clothes, right? So think about prom, everybody. We have the little flower, you know, or a good, or, you know, when I say prom, I'll be real. A couple weeks ago, I was at an event, John, and for the West Coast Produce Expo, they had prom that night. So that's why prom was still in my mind. But you put the flower on the coat, right? So it then the French farmers to plant French dinners to eat this strange new species. Leading up to the French Revolution, famine was rampant. And in fact, potatoes were used to help fight starvation in northern France in 1785. One of the things I'm going to tell you that's off the beaten path a little bit, which is when I went to the Dominican Republic last year and did my hike to Pico Duarte, what do you think we ate in the morning before we went on our 12-mile hike?
Potatoes and bananas.
Potatoes, plantains.
Out there. There you go.
Spaghetti, right? Things that are going to keep you full for the day, right? And it does. Trust me. Try eating a full potato at 7 a.m. in the morning. Like, seriously, it's what you're like. You're putting it down with eggs, bananas, and everything else. So it wasn't until 1794 that potatoes really began gaining traction in France. This was the year that Madame Marigot published a potato cookbook. From this year on, potatoes became widely accepted as the food for the revolutionaries. And then the following year, massive plots of potatoes were grown to feed rebels as they waged a long siege against the Paris Commune. So by urging potato cultivation on a massive scale, Parmentier was unknowingly promoting the notion of planting huge acres with clones, a true monoculture. And then Thomas Jefferson and Parmentier worked in his library and became a supporter of the potato in America. He served potato dishes in the White House during his presidency, also known, this is a tough word, Francophilie. Jefferson is accredited with serving the first fried potatoes that he had seen in France, the now unambiguous French fries, everybody. That's right. We got French fries now. So it's kind of funny. So the potato kind of led to an empire. And you're so right. When it comes to food, John, there are wars fought over food, man. People realize the banana industry. I mean, think about it, right? Potatoes, bread, food will cause wars, everybody. Seriously, it definitely will. And again, so by feeding rapidly growing populations, permitted a handful of European nations to assert dominion over most of the world between 1750 and 1950. Okay. So as we grew, Europe's population grew from 140 million in 1750 to 400 million in 1900. The population boom gave rise to the guano industry. Guano, bird excrement, is an extremely potent fertilizer, which gave birth to an industrial farming as we know today. And by the end of the 18th century, almost a quarter of all Europeans were living on potatoes alone. Okay. So the potato was so successful in Ireland because landless laborers renting tiny plots from British landowners who were interested only in raising cattle or producing grain for export could now plant potatoes, which sufficiently fed their families, John. So in some cases, produce enough extra that they could sell. So they were producing so much, they actually had to start selling it from their plots of land. So
yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. And as we move into the 1800s, right? So by 1840, almost one half of the Irish population had become entirely dependent upon the potato. That's what I was talking about. The Europeans, when I think of potatoes, I think of Europeans. I thought they're the ones who brought it over here, right? When you think of Europeans, you think of them planting potatoes. Heck, I bet, you know, the Vandenberg family, if you go back to their farms, right? I guarantee you potatoes were probably on their list back in the days. So that's one of the most interesting things that everybody was getting into it. And specifically, they had two yielding varieties. So in 1840, though, disaster struck as a potato blight affected crops across Northern Europe. This water mold caused serious disease that would shrink potatoes, giving them a rotted, corky interior. Ooh, that probably black look inside. I've seen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what would happen. The interior rendered them inedible. Originated in central Mexico, probably brought over via trade. Heck, just like citrus greening, right? They bring it over from one state to another, from one country to another. We bring those pests. We bring those bugs. In this case, we brought it over to and do the guano rush, right? These are some of the things that happened from being traded from South America, right? So it seems to have the first broken out in Flanders in 1845 and then spread quickly to Denmark, Germany, and England. So we're starting to see it spread really quick. Mm-hmm. First reported in Ireland in September 1845, blight destroyed 25 to 35% of the crop in the first year, John. 25 to 35% of the crop. And blight finally winded down in 1852. 75% of the potato crop was destroyed, killed at least 1 million Irish, and caused 2 million more to flee the country. Ireland was a colony of Britain at this time, so British lords continued to export other crops to mainland Britain, leaving no food for the Irish when farming it for their lords. That's crazy, man. I mean that in itself is amazing to hear. I mean, if you're out there listening, I mean, think about it. I mean, the entire crop. Think about it, the entire citrus crop, which is happening in Florida, the entire dragon fruit crop or banana crop. What happens if we were to lose 75% of that crop? So by 1850, New York, with more than 250,000 Irish-born residents, was the most Irish city in the world. The impact of the Great Famine devastated the Irish culture, language, social demographics, and formed the basis of the massive Irish diaspora, which has turned ahead a huge impact on social history and the destination country. Today, Ireland remains one of the few European nations whose population is smaller than it was in the 19th century. Damage to the crops elsewhere, notably in Scotland, were deep enough into the 1840s to give the moniker the Hungry 40s. Ugh. It's like the Depression, right? It's like we all know when the Depression happened. So we got the Hungry 40s. Now, just after blight retreated in the mid-1860s, another potato monster appeared in America. It was the Colorado potato beetle, and it destroyed everything in its midst. That's crazy. That is crazy. Panicked farmers turned to the first artificial pesticide, a form of arsenic. Their invasion was so great that swarms covered entire beaches in the Atlantic Ocean. Quite by chance, as it happens, someone has discovered how to fight them. One of the potato farmers on the half-ravaged plantation who had already written off through paint used for walls, right? After a few days, he was utterly surprised when he saw that the Colorado potato beetle was gone. It was not the green color that drove it away, but something else. A chemical composition based on arsenic and copper. Soon the news, this salvaged paint spread and other growers began to spray their crops and the beetle was beaten. Competition to produce ever more potent arsenic blends launched the modern pesticide industry. John, at one point in the late 19th century, during the Klondike gold rush in Alaska, potatoes were considered to be worth the same as gold by the gold seekers themselves. The reason was the vitamin C contained in the potatoes enabled diggers to survive in the wild. It was not until the russet Burbank potato was developed by American horticulturalist Luther Burbank in 1872 that the Idaho potato industry really took off. He introduced the Burbank potato to Ireland to help combat the blight epidemic. He sold the rights to the Burbank potato for $150, which he used to travel to Santa Rosa, California. And in Santa Rosa, California, he established a nursery, garden greenhouse, and the experimental farm to become famous throughout the world. By the early 1900s, the russet Burbank potato began appearing throughout Idaho.
Yeah, there you have Idaho potatoes still today, right? That's the big spot of domestic potatoes. And what's really amazing, Patrick, is that, you know, you see the impact again. You know, we've talked about this now a few times on our other episodes, that the serious impact that these different crops have had on human history. And, you know, with this, the great blight, the great famine of Ireland, you see how drastic of an impact the potato had. And it wasn't so much that the potato itself directly caused the deaths of the Irish. It was that, you know, the Irish were subject to the English being a, you know, colony of England at the time, that, you know, the potato was all they had to eat. And because England was basically taking everything else and exporting it to their country. So had England actually stepped in and helped out these guys, they probably wouldn't have had this drastic effect, you know, on the whole entire continent of Europe. You had several hundred thousand people die, which is, again, not a lot, but you're talking about a million just in Ireland alone that perished because of the potato blight. So amazing to see the impact. And the potato also, as you touched on through your comments here, indirectly triggered the birth of the fertilizer industry at the same time nearly as the pesticide industry. So those are pretty amazing impacts as well. But let's wrap off the history here, going into the 1900s. So you're looking at now the First World War. U.S. government had hoped to increase domestic potato consumption would basically compensate for the export of millions of bushels of wheat destined for the Allies in Europe. So wheat's much easier to transport in terms of weight and logistics than potatoes. So wheat was going out of the U.S. and the U.S. said, okay, we still got to feed our population. So they were pushing potatoes. You'd have shops in towns across America basically staging, you know, big displays of potatoes and propaganda to eat potatoes, to be patriotic. But at the same time, you move on to the next war in World War II, you have Nazi Germany now leveraging the potato as a means to further their nationalism. So they use propaganda to say that Germans were people of the potato, asserting that eating the crop would make them more German. And they actually even attempted to breed potatoes that would thrive in German soil and went so far as to determine a list of approved varieties. And they were, and people in turn were actually prohibited to grow anything that wasn't on that list. And on the other side of the Atlantic, in the U.S. at the same time in World War II, the government was actually releasing guidelines stressing the benefits of incorporating ample amounts of potatoes into everybody's everyday diet. So again, potato, a sound crop, an easy crop, a cheap crop that can give you the nutritional value you need, especially at times of war.
Whoa, potato or potato?
I'm going with potato.
I'm going to keep saying it.
But yeah, I mean, so look, beyond that point, you know, obviously potatoes have continued to evolve primarily into just dishes we eat, right? I mean, you see it in so many different forms and formats of the foods that we eat today, whether it be chips or, like you said, baked potatoes and God knows what else. But look, potato probably was one of the most significant vegetables in human history. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, without the potato, Europe wouldn't have been Europe that we know today. They wouldn't have grown to the domination that they did, colonizing all these countries. You know, there's been plenty of studies that show a correlation between the production of the potato and the improved health and increase the population. And that really pushed Europe ahead. And you have to look at the timing too. This was right around the same time when the potato was really reaching its height around the Industrial Revolution. So you have a healthy labor force, a well-fed labor force, and they needed those labors to push forward to run those machines and the industrial economy. So potato had a big, big role. But at the same time, having, you know, humans successfully domesticate a potato, we've unfortunately disarmed it from a lot of its natural defenses, which actually leaves it particularly vulnerable to pests and disease. So if you look at today, I believe the figure is somewhere over $2 billion gets spent on protecting the potato crop per year. So you can see there's a very mutual dependent relationship between human and potato. You know, without humans, the domesticated potatoes would probably die out. You know, it's going to go back to being the toxic wild potato that existed before humans started domesticating it.
The nightshade's coming back, right?
The nightshade's coming back. Exactly. So yeah, it's an amazing piece of vegetable. I know when I started researching this, I definitely gained a much more respected opinion of this food now when I'm eating it.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And like you said, without the care of humans, it would die out. Very interesting product, right? They're high cost, they're risky. It's one of those things. And listen, everyone, this is why we do it. We want to make sure that you understand the importance of your fruits and vegetables that you are putting in your body, right, John? I mean, that's one of the biggest things that we talk about. So as we conclude our episode on potatoes today, everyone, we want you to think about it, right? So as we conclude the history lesson on potatoes, it is important to know when you head into your local grocery store and pick up a fresh potato, right? Whether it's the nibbles in the bag, right? Or it's the big boys, I call them the big boys, right? You are picking up a relic in time, okay? And that relic in time, you are going to enjoy. So make sure that you do. Everyone, that's our show for today. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Produce Industry Podcast with Patrick Kelly. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Anchor to get new, fresh weekly episodes. For more, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Produce Industry Podcast. Until next time, see you in the fields or on the horizon.